everybody. I'm Emma Houghton, and you're listening to 30 Teams in 30 Days on the Did You Hear podcast, part of the Blue Wire Hustle podcast network. We are 16 days away from April 1st, which is opening day of the 2021 Major League Baseball regular season. I will spend each day in March previewing all 30 Major League Baseball teams in alphabetical order. So, today is March 15th, and I continue on with the Houston Astros. I'm now putting all of these season previews on the Did You Hear podcast feed. So I will put a link in the bio of this episode to my SoundCloud account where I had put the first half of all the Major League Baseball teams. Go on SoundCloud to find your season preview from the Arizona Diamondbacks to the Detroit Tigers, and then from the Astros all the way on through the rest of March will be the rest of these season previews. So as always, I'll go through team history, the over-under of their Pecota standings, position battles, starting rotation, bullpen depth, bench, and prospects. And we have an interesting one today on the 15th with the Houston Astros. Of course, I mentioned, it actually is very telling or coincidental that the Astros are right after the Tigers because the Tigers hired the former Astros manager, A.J. Hinch, who got fired because of the infamous sign-stealing scandal that sent him and Astros general manager, Jeff Luhnow, out of Houston in one of the biggest cheating scandals in all of American sports. So that was, those claims were made in 2019, I believe, and it was based on the cheating in the 2017 season when the Astros won the World Series. There were no consequences in terms of that championship being stripped, so the Astros are still World Series champions. They lost their coach, though, their manager, their general manager. And the effects and the consequences will really be everlasting because of the stigma that will be around these players as cheaters. But let's go through a brief history of this Astros because it's incredible how low they were and how high they were in the span of about 7 or 8 years. So in 2020, they finished below 500 for the first time in years. They were 29-31. They did get a wild card berth because it was the expanded postseason. And they lost in the ALCS to the Tampa Bay Rays, who made it to the World Series in Game 7. One of the reasons why I'm so excited to talk about this Astros team is because even though nearly every single player on the Astros last season had one of their career worst years, worst seasons of their career, the Astros made it to the ALCS and they pushed the Rays to the absolute brink. This team, this Houston team in the playoffs is truly just another beast. And I'll get into it with some of these splits that we saw last year that were just incredible. But in 2019, they had 107 wins. They lost in the World Series that year to the Nationals. That was Garrett Cole's last year in Houston. In 2018, they had 103 wins. They lost in the ALCS to the Boston Red Sox. That was Andrew Benintendi. Game-saving catch in left field. He robbed Alex Bregman of an extra base hit that would have scored runs, and the Astros would have won that game. 2017, 101 wins. They won the World Series. Let's bring it back even further. In 2013, the Astros had 51 wins and 111 losses. 8 years later, they lost in the ALCS to in Game 7 to the team that made the World Series. They won a championship in that time. It's incredible. It's the perfect example of how a rebuilding works. And the Astros really spearheaded the whole tanking movement in baseball. They tore absolutely everything down. It was miserable to be an Astros fan for so long. But if this is the after effects of all that waiting, a championship, and now a really young, solid, talented core of players, then Astros fans are pretty happy. So I mentioned it there. The Astros have made it to the ALCS or further in 4 straight years. 1 championship coming out of it. Now let's go into some additions this offseason, additions and departures. They added a lot of nice bullpen pieces, including opener Ryan Stanek came over from the Rays. Pedro Baez. They added catcher Jason Castro to add some depth behind Martin Maldonado. And then potentially their biggest addition was pitcher Jake Odorizzi. He didn't report even to spring training camp until March 10th. Spring training had already started and Jake Odorizzi still didn't have a job. And then even though it wasn't technically a departure, Framber Valdez was fielding a ground ball in spring training. His finger got caught. He ended up fracturing his ring finger on his pitching hand, and he is potentially out for the year. So with that news, the Astros went out and signed Jake Odorizzi. They were desperately trying to stay under the luxury tax threshold because they exceeded it last year, but with Jake Odorizzi's contract, they will most likely be over the threshold. But at this point, they really didn't have much choice. Framber Valdez was their best pitcher last year, and to lose him, to already be without Justin Verlander, who's recovering from Tommy John surgery, the Astros' pitching is in a serious hole. And then they just added Jake Odorizzi, a former All-Star, to try and slot into this 2 or 3 spot in the rotation and try and keep this Astros rotation floating. But I'll get into the rotation a lot more later. Departures, you've got some incredibly big names. George Springer is now a Toronto Blue Jay. The center fielder for the Astros is no longer with the team. Postseason hero. They also lost Roberto Osuna, who has been the cause for a lot of controversy in the past few years off the field, but he was an incredible reliever for the Astros for years. They also lost Josh Reddick, who is still a free agent. He had a lot of at-bats and a lot of time in right field for the Astros across the years. And they also lost Jake Marisnyk, who was a backup center fielder to George Springer, and he saw some time in some corner positions too. And remember that when I go through some of the depth options, because especially in center field, you'll probably have Miles Straw slotting in there. It would be nice to have a guy like Jake Marisnyk there for some, almost a breath of fresh air, a sigh of relief, because you know that Marisnyk has a lot of major league time under his belt. You can't say the same for a few of the guys that I'm going to mention in terms of bench and prospects. So that is a overview of the 2020 offseason. Now let's get into projections for the position battles. So for catcher, I mentioned that they added Jason Castro, but Martin Maldonado is going to be the opening day catcher for the Astros. He has a really good reputation and relationships with all the pitchers in the organization. His offense struggles, but he is an elite defensive catcher. Now going to first base, you will know all these names as I go through them. Yuli Gurriel, his hair is just an absolute anomaly in this Astros organization. Since his rookie season in 2017, you would also expect Yuli Gurriel to be much older than he is. He was a rookie in 17. His OPS plus has been above 105 in those 3 seasons since he was a rookie. In 2020, he had a 76 OPS plus and a 232 batting average. Career low year for him, like it will be for a lot of other guys that I talk about. The Astros count on Yuli returning to that old form in 2021 because he is a key part of that lineup and a key part of the infield for Houston. Another guy that they need a bounce back year from, Jose Altuve. He is a 6-time All-Star. He was the 2017 MVP, AL MVP, the year that the Astros won the World Series. He's a 5-time Silver Slugger. He's won a Gold Glove. He's won the batting title 3 times. He is one of the best players in baseball. And in 2020, Altuve had a .219 batting average and a 71 OPS plus. Those are both career lows for him. He just struggled. He struggled defensively, which was even more rare, and he struggled offensively. He usually has such low strikeout numbers. He doesn't chase. You were seeing him do both of those things in the regular season. And then the craziest thing of all was that the Astros earned their wild card berth. They advanced to the ALDS. And in the ALDS, Altuve hit 400. In the ALCS against the Rays, Altuve hit 462. This guy is an absolute machine in the postseason. It's unbelievable to watch. He was also dealing with the defensive yips again. But no matter how bad of a season Altuve had, he shows up in the postseason, and he was a huge reason, if not the reason, why the Astros did so well in the postseason last fall. They're expecting him to go back to maybe not MVP form, but at least batting higher than 219. He's usually in the 300 range. And if he is, then that just automatically vaults Houston into this contention category, because that's where they are and that's where they have been for the last 4 years. It's not, oh, I wonder if Houston's going to win the division. It's, how far is Houston going to make it in the playoffs? Can they make it to the ALCS for the fifth straight year? Can they beat the Yankees probably and get themselves into the World Series to face the Dodgers, the Padres, the Braves? That's what the expectations are this season. And a lot of them are on Jose Altuve to revert back to his 2019 form. Another guy, Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, and Carlos Correa are some of the best offensive and defensive talents in the game. They all had terrible 2020 seasons. And if they don't return to form, then the Astros are going to struggle. If they return to form, then the Astros are an ALCS-bound team again. Bregman, in 2020, he had a 116 OPS plus, which is well above league average. But in 2019, he had a 162 OPS plus. And in 2018, when he was even younger, he had a 152 OPS plus. So 116 is concerningly low for somebody like Bregman, who's one of the best hitters in the game. Part of it was because he had a hamstring injury, so he only played in 42 games, only had 180 plate appearances. In the postseason, he was actually a guy that struggled. It was more of the 2020 season. It was because of that injury. He only batted .220 with a .300 slug in the postseason. That has to be one of the worst clips of his career. They need him to rebound, and they also need shortstop Carlos Correa to rebound. And it is very much in Carlos Correa's... He very much needs to rebound as well for his own personal sake. Let's just put it at that, because he is one of the five shortstops to hit free agency after the 2021 season. He's been the face of this franchise ever since he won Rookie of the Year in 2015, and it'll be a very serious decision that the Astros need to make if they want to offer him an extension. I think the single most important thing that will go into this Astros decision about extending Correa is his health in 2021. He has one full 162-game healthy season, and that was back in 2016. He dealt with injuries in 17, 18, and 19. He underperformed in 2020. And now, finally, when it matters, he wasn't able to dispel any of those durability concerns in 2020 because it was a shortened season. Right before he potentially gets extended by the Astros or he hits free agency and tries to reach a Manny Machado-type deal, which was 10 years, $300 million, he's turning 27. And 2020 year is the year that Carlos Correa can prove that he is durable. He can play a full season without getting healthy. The power numbers will still be there. He'll still be excellent on defense. And he was another guy who really turned it on in the postseason as well. He has the postseason pedigree already. It's crazy that all of these guys in the Astros are so young and they already have so much postseason experience because this team is just built for the playoffs. Now we move to the outfield. Technically, in the addition section of this pod at the beginning, I should have said that they brought back Michael Brantley. And that wasn't necessarily assumed. He actually was linked to the Blue Jays. A source went out that Brantley did sign with Toronto, and then it then got retracted. And I think that same day, just hours later, news came out that Michael Brantley re-signed with the Astros, 2 years, $32 million. Brantley is a four-time All-Star. He will be the opening day left fielder in Houston. In 2020, he was actually one of the few guys who didn't regress, but people really just aren't talking about him because he's so steady. He is such a stable outfielder A and hitter B. He spent almost all of his career in Cleveland, where he was the two-hitter behind Francisco Lindor, and he was incredible there. In 2020, he batted .300 with a 126 OPS plus. Those are just the type of numbers that you can count on Michael Brantley having year in and year out. Now we move to center field. And for the first time in years, center field won't be manned by George Springer. And that is a crushing blow for Houston. They didn't go out and sign Jackie Bradley Jr. They no longer have Jake Mrazek. They didn't go out and even sign a Kevin Pillar and Albert Almora Jr. They're sticking with their internal squad, and right now that guy is Miles Straw. So in his career, he has a .327 on-base percentage. That's only in 224 Major League plate appearances. The reason why I'm talking about on-base percentage here with Straw is because along with losing Springer's defensive talent, they're also losing his power in the lineup and their leadoff hitter. Springer is, I don't even know if this is an argument, the best leadoff hitter in the game. He is absolutely incredible at the top of the lineup. In a few games that Springer didn't play with the Astros last year, manager Dusty Baker experimented with the lineup a bit, and he gave Miles Straw the most chances at the top, above Bregman, above Kyle Tucker, above Jose Altuve. Miles Straw got the most chances at the top of the lineup. I personally disagree. I do not think Miles Straw should be leading off. Even if he had a better on-base percentage in the minors, which he did, .327 is respectable. I'm not saying anything against Straw here, but I think you should, or Dusty Baker, should lose the reputation or the inherent idea that your leadoff batter has to have a high OBP. He has to be a base stealing threat, which Straw is. He is both of those, but he is also potentially the worst hitter on this team. Alex Bregman should be in the leadoff spot, or Jose Altuve should be in the leadoff spot. He might not get on base every single time, but he should be getting the most at bats, either Bregman or Altuve, because those two guys are the best hitters on this team. We'll see how Straw matches up. There will be some versatility on the bench that can come in for Straw if he needs backup. There are also some prospects waiting in the wings. And then right fielder, it's Kyle Tucker. And he really emerged in 2020 as one of the best offensive players on this team. And that's because everybody else had such a poor year. But Tucker led all of the Major League Baseball in triples last year with 6, which you don't see too often anymore. He had a .512 slug and a .123 OPS plus. So he 100% deserves that spot in right field. And now we move to DH, one of the most exciting hitters in all of baseball. It's the young guy, Yordan Alvarez. Air Yordan, as people call him. He was the 2019 AL Rookie of the Year. He basically could have won MVP that year because his hitting numbers were so exceptional. His slash line was .313, .412, and a .655 slug. He also had a .173 OPS plus. I've mentioned it before on a different season preview episode. In 2019, Alvarez had one of the best seasons as a hitter. Not one of the best rookie seasons as a hitter. One of the best seasons as a hitter, period. And having him back, he had knee problems in 2020 that pretty much kept him off the field the entire season. Having him back, having a healthy Correa, a healthy Altuve and Bregman, or if they weren't unhealthy last year, then at least a normal 2019 version of both Altuve and Bregman. This team is top 5 in baseball. And it's hard to say that because people are so against the Astros nowadays for good reason. But their hitters are just too good. The one thing that could drag them down is pitching. And I'll get into that now. So the starting pitchers, they added Jake Odorizzi to replace Framber Valdez, who is potentially out for the season with a fractured finger. There's definitely something a little bit odd going on there. But nothing as of late. They are substituting him with Odorizzi, so that softens the blow a bit. This will be the first time since 2014 that a man other than Dallas Keuchel or Justin Verlander will start for the Houston Astros. And it'll most likely be Zach Greinke, who isn't that much of a disappointment. The guy's 37 years old. He's a Cy Young Award winner. He's a 6-time All-Star. This will be his 5th opening day if he does end up starting for the Astros, which truly is a shoe-in at this point. He has a career .337 ERA. He is probably a Hall of Famer. He's second among active pitchers in career regular season innings pitched. The one guy ahead of him, his teammate Justin Verlander. So Greinke has shown year in and year out that he can pitch 200-plus innings. He's done that 9 times. He can really throw a pitching rotation on his back and be that ace that Houston needs him to be, especially this year. Like I said, Valdez was the best pitcher last year, but Greinke was right behind him. The main concern behind Greinke, you do have concerns that Greinke's age is going up, and then you do have the decision at the end of this upcoming season that he's a free agent, so you probably part ways with him. But he is the only guy who has carried a full 162-game season workload. All of these other guys behind him, well, actually besides Jake Odorizzi, but all of the old Astros, I put that in quote because they're not actually old, but the guys who have been there for a few years, Lance McCullers Jr., Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, even Luis Garcia, who will probably see time as the fifth starter, none of them have pitched a full season. Lance McCullers Jr. is the longest tenured Astros pitcher at this point, which is kind of mind-blowing and not necessarily positive for Houston. But let's get into Odorizzi first, who will probably slot into that two spot where Valdez would have been. Odorizzi, with that being said, he didn't even get into camp until March 10th, so he won't be ready, definitely not opening day, maybe not opening day week, and then we'll have to see as time goes on when he is ready, because right now he's throwing 30 or 40 pitch bullpen sessions, and other guys are throwing sim games at the spring training in the Grapefruit League. So it's definitely a different timeline for Odorizzi. But to get into his numbers, he's made 28 or more starts in five consecutive seasons. From 2015 to 2019, he was just an innings machine. He averaged 165 innings pitch across those 5 years. He's a 105 ERA plus career pitcher, which is above league average. In 2020, he only made four starts, but that's because of injuries. So it was really tough for him to hit the market after 2020 instead of after 2019 when he was an all-star, had his career year, all that. I think the market was so slow for him because he was asking for so much. And especially this year where all the budgets were slashed because of COVID, owners and teams have a hard time giving a four-year deal to somebody like Odorizzi, who's coming off a pretty major injury and almost a completely lost season. But he was absolutely the pitcher Houston needed when Valdez went down, so they're very lucky that Odorizzi was still available. You also have Lance McCullers Jr., who I mentioned, Lance McCullers Jr. He is also a free agent at the end of 21, so I do not see a situation where Greinke, Correa, and McCullers stay. Another thing with durability for all these guys, McCullers threw a career-high 154 innings as a rookie in 2016. That was his career-high. He hasn't even come close to that since. He's dealt with injuries. This will be a big year for him to prove that he can eat up those innings. Houston will just have to be careful with how many they give him at a time. And the same could be said with Christian Javier, who's another young guy who doesn't have a ton of major league experience. And Jose Urquidy, he's thrown even less. He has only pitched 70 innings in his career, but he already has that postseason experience. He's already showed that the moment isn't too big for him. He can go out there and pitch and perform like the prospect he was touted as. Another guy that Houston's really excited about who will slot into that fifth day as of now is Luis Garcia. He averaged 94 miles per hour in 2020. He looked really good in his starts in the fall. Again, he's immune to the pressure, it seems like. Those starts in September and October went well. It's not a ton of depth, but if all of these pitchers overperform just a little bit, I think the offense will be good enough, or slash one of the best in the league, that the pitchers will be okay and this team will be okay. Bullpen, the Astros really saw this as their biggest weakness going into this season, and they made a lot of moves to lessen that. So Ryan Pressly will be their closer. He was an all-star in 2019, didn't pitch as much in the shortened 2020 season, but he still had a 12.4 strikeout to nine ratio last year. He's got really good stuff. Steve Cishek behind him. He's a side armor. He's coming over from the Cubs. You've also got Pedro Baez. He was on the COVID-19 list. I don't believe it's come out whether he had COVID or was just exposed to it, but that could obviously limit him as we get into opening day. You also have Brooks Raley. Enoli Paredes, he did really, really well last year. Paredes had a 3.05 ERA and a 3.63 FIP in 2020. And then another guy they picked up, Ryan Stanek. Stanek was really, he spearheaded the opener movement. So it'll be interesting to see if the Astros utilize Stanek a lot, because he could even slot in as a six-day quote-unquote starter. He could be an opener for a bullpen day, especially if you're limiting innings for these young guys to make sure that they don't get hurt. I think Stanek was the perfect pickup for the Astros. Not a sexy name like any of the other free agents they picked up or they got rid of, like Springer most notably, but I think Stanek could be incredibly impactful for this team, again, that needs to rely on their experienced bullpen guys instead of throwing everything into their 24-year-old pitcher who hasn't pitched more than 100 innings in his career. So definitely expect to see a lot of Stanek. In terms of the bench, we have Aledmys Diaz, who truly has been in Houston forever. I think if he was on a lot of other teams, he would be seeing some consistent time. But because so many positions are plugged in Houston by some of the best players in the game, he's still seen as that versatility infielder, outfielder. He was an all-star as a rookie in 2016. He is actually a career 109 OPS guy. So again, to have a bench player that is that above average year in and year out is a huge advantage for Houston. Another guy, Abraham Toro, he is valuable because he is a switch hitter. And the Astros are very right-handed heavy in the box. Toro didn't have a good 2020 at all, but it was in less than 100 plate appearances. So that's a short sample size. And they hope that Toro can rebound and see some time if they have any injuries or they just need to see more. They need to mix things up in the lineup with a left-handed hitter. And now let's quickly touch on prospects before I finished up with the Pecota standings and my philosophy on the Astros this season. The only prospect ranked in MLB's top 100 list is right-handed pitcher Forrest Whitley. He comes in at number 41. Whitley has had already such a tumultuous career, and he hasn't even seen huge time at the major league level. He hurt his shoulder early in March, so it's already on the horizon that he could have shoulder-ending Tommy John surgery, which would be devastating for him and devastating for the organization, who, again, really could have used another arm, especially a young arm who is as high of a prospect as Whitley is. He's a guy, he's honestly just kind of a wild card. He has struggled in each of his years in the minors, despite being really the saving grace in the organization that Houston thought he was. But they do have another pitcher in Brandon Belak, who has a lot of word of mouth around him, positive word of mouth. He made 6 starts for the Astros in 2020. The first 3 were really, really good. He had a 1.69 ERA in 16 innings, very small sample size, but he looked good. His stuff was good. And then in the 4th game, he just got absolutely crushed by the Padres. 7 runs in only 1 1/3 innings. Again, that's the Padres, who have one of the best offense in baseball. But Belak definitely starts at the minors and pushes himself up before we potentially see him further down the season in Houston. And then another outfielder to watch, again, this could be backup for Miles Straw if he needs it, it's outfielder Chaz McCormick. Houston is incredibly high on him. He has a chance to be the 4th outfielder to make the opening day roster. He's that good. He's athletic. He has high baseball IQ. Offensive numbers aren't great, but he could definitely see some time in center as potentially a platoon guy with Miles Straw. So with all that being said, Pecota has Houston at 91 wins. I definitely think Houston wins the division this year. It is a weaker AL West. The A's lost Liam Hendricks, their closer. They lost Robbie Grossman, Marcus Semien, among other guys. Yes, Houston lost George Springer and Ozuna, but they have enough of the core still in place that I think they'll be fine. I think they'll comfortably win the division. They do have some questions in the future because the Mariners are going to get really good really soon. The A's seem to always stick around. They always bring guys. Of course, they still have Matt Chapman. And the Astros have a lot of questions about who they're going to bring back after this 2021 season in 2022. And the biggest is Carlos Correa, like I said. I don't know if I can confidently say that I think the Astros are going to make their 5th consecutive ALCS because of their pitching. I think the offense is there. I think all of the guys that I talked about that regressed in 2020 bounce back in 2021. And it's weird to even say bounce back because Jose Altuve is an MVP candidate every single season, it feels like. But he really struggled. Bregman struggled on his standards. Correa struggled. Yuli Gurriel struggled. If all those guys bounce back, I think they win way over 91 games. So I'm hard over on Pecota. I think they're about the 95 to 97 range in terms of wins. They're going to have to see their pitchers overperform. Lance McCullers Jr. is going to have a good year. They're going to need to see a lot out of Odorizzi 2019 form, more out of Urquidy, who is a postseason star for them, and Christian Javier. Maybe you get Framber Valdez towards the end of the season. I'm not sure what that's going to be like. But they need to have a good season so that in 2022, they have Verlander back. They're still competing. Hopefully, Correa is healthy enough that they sign him back. I truly do think that if Correa shows that he can be durable enough to play a full season, that the Astros sign him back because he is just such a solid core of this team that really started when the Astros were still bad back in the 2014 to 2015 range. And he was a huge part of their 2017 World Series run, a huge part of all four of their ALCSs in the past 4 years. So I think it is another strong season for the Astros. I think they're probably the third best team in the AL behind the Yankees and the White Sox. And then I think you have the Astros and then maybe the Rays after them, maybe the Twins after them. But this team is too talented to have under 90 wins and to not make the playoffs and to not win this division. So once again, it's another tough year to be in the AL West because the Astros are just too good. And I definitely think Bregman, Correa, and Altuve have monster seasons. And they all win All-Stars. And they probably all are up for MVP consideration. So that'll wrap up my season preview of the Houston Astros. Thank you for listening. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for a Kansas City Royals season preview.